New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
Welcome to the Mimir Road Show, episode number 127. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me here in Las Vegas. And Cole Coffee, things are back to normal, my friend.
Yes. Where
are
we at?
We are here, Boomers, on a Thirsty Thursday, but not stuffed back in the Boom Boom Room. As nice as the Boom Boom Room was.
Boom Boom Room was nice. It's got a great name. Better name.
Does have a better name. As nice as the VIP Boom Boom Room was, it just didn't feel like our normal setup. Here we are. It's just dive bar city up in here right now. Mm-hmm. It's kind of quiet. The lights are dark.
Got less international flavor, though, this week, though.
Definitely a lot less international flavor.
Hello, Governor.
Michael Bisping?
No, that was my Sandu.
That was your Sandu. That's fantastic. No, listen, I got to say, as much as Conor McGregor and versus Floyd Mayweather was fun and crazy, I'm glad that stuff's over. You know, we talked about fatigue kind of setting in a little bit, and I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the show because by now it's late in the week. People have moved on. Well, I say people have moved on. They're still talking about it, but we're moving on to the next thing, and I'm kind of excited to just get back to real-world stuff.
Yeah, it's true, even though I did try to put in for a last-minute credentials to the Triple G Canelo fight.
Did you really?
I doubt I'm going to get it, but I was like, it's here in town. Let me just try, and they're like, oh, well. It's a late credential request, but so don't get your hopes up. Ultimately, is what it said. But
that's not this week, though. That's September 16th week, or when
is that? It's coming up. It's coming up real quick.
Yeah, usually they have big fights on September 16th, which is Mexican Independence Day. Yeah, it's going to be a great fight. That would be good.
Yeah, it should be fun.
All right, so I do want to talk, though, a little bit about Mayweather versus McGregor. I mean, we've got to put a little bow on
it.
Since we couldn't do and a half. But I don't want to talk about the fight itself so much. I think that's been hashed up to death. What I do want to talk about, too, though, is, you know, I took some pictures during it. You were inside the arena. Big surprise there, right? You know,
yep,
we thought you were
going
to be in the tent. You were actually inside the arena.
Kudos to the boxing PR for
it
that.
It was nice. They took care of you. We were both inside the building. We both got to watch the whole thing unfold. But you know what finally dawned on me? Is the chicken and the egg. The chicken and the egg. Boxing shows, the undercards suck, right? And it's to me, and again, I don't want to sit here and make it sound like I'm blasting, you know, Mayweather Promotions or Showtime or anybody else. But as a whole, you've been to a handful of boxing cards. I mean, that main event, dude, that main event when Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor were in the ring – oh my God! It felt like it felt like a type of sporting event that right your kids are going to be asking you about, and people are going to be asking you about years from now, right? That felt amazing, but the rest of the night, even the main card, it doesn't feel good, and I don't feel like they spend a lot of time really catering to the in-house market, which I think the UFC does such a great job of doing. You know, DJ AL3 bumping tunes all night long. They got dynamic lighting. They got, you know, video packages all through the night, sizzle reels of fighters on the main card, you know, maybe some hype videos. Of course, you got the famous, you know, Baba O'Reilly from The Who going into the start of the main card. I mean, there's all these little production elements that boxing just doesn't take they just don't take the shot to do it, right?
Right.
But then it makes me wonder, are they not doing all that stuff because there's literally nobody in the arena? Or is there literally nobody in the arena because they're not doing this stuff? Because the undercard was just, I mean, just like, oh, I mean, I took pictures and you know, people that have seen boxing events know, but a lot of people on Twitter were like, oh, my God, is that the way it is? And, yes, that's the way it is. I mean, T-Mobile Arena for the first fight had, like, seven people in it.
Yeah.
It just makes me wonder, like, are they not going out of their way because they know there's no audience to cater to, or is there no audience to cater to because they're not going out of their way?
Chicken and the egg. Now I get it. I mean, definitely there were some good fights. Like, just looking at going at the title fights, there was the Gervonta Davis, Francisco Fonseca fight. Was not really enthused about that fight. It just didn't play out how I thought it was going to be. Weird sort of finish to that one. I thought the Cleverly Badu Jack fight, I liked that fight. Yeah. I thought that was an awesome
fight. That was a good fight.
And I thought Thabiti Cunningham was a good fight, too. So that was the, I think those were two of the fights, and there might have been one right before that, but those are the two fights where I was like, holy cow, okay. I think these are the, I think they're the, this is worth watching. Mm-hmm. I want to say it was that, unless it was the one right before, but here I am trying to pull up the undercard, and I can't even find
remember.
The names of the guys, you know. But yeah, when the night started, it was definitely more of a snoozer, and it just felt weird being there so early. And I think probably without the loud noise, without the loud crowd, you know, just left to my own thoughts, you know, because I, unfortunately, the section I was sitting didn't have power, so I couldn't plug in a computer. Didn't have a table to really set up any stuff, but lucky enough where I was sit, there was a little bit of space next to my chair, so I was actually able to store my gear. Because if not, if you remember, I came over by you
yeah.
and was storing all my gear as much as I could by you because there was no space. So a lot of media was kind of getting told they couldn't bring your gear in over there. It was just a weird, weird situation. Media was complaining about lack of access to power. You know, a lot of these guys are trying to work on their laptops and
right.
not being able to plug in, but... Yeah, I mean, just the whole atmosphere just was so lacking what we're used to when we go to T-Mobile for a UFC fight or something along those lines that it was just weird. It was sort of dragging, but there were good fights. So I don't want to say that there wasn't – that all the fights were boring, that it was just the other one, because there were some good fights that I thought were pretty spectacular. But on the whole, it was few and far between. I think maybe three fights out of – I don't know how many – 12 or something, 14, whatever, were fun
eight.
To watch.
Eight.
Was there only eight?
It felt longer, huh?
It felt forever.
Well, you know, you and I aren't sitting here trying to pretend like we're boxing experts and boxing connoisseurs, and that's
I
why
don't
I don't
say I'm an anything expert.
A videographer expert. You,
yeah.
You're a camera expert. But I guess, you know, I feel like that's what we do, right? We travel around the world. We go to different events. We just talk about what we see. We talk about how we feel. And I think it deserves to be said. I mean, the first two fights of the night, now granted, Savannah Marshall, Sydney LeBlanc, I think one of them was making their pro debuts. I mean, I get it, but it's not, it wasn't even streamed. It was unaired. They had two dark fights. This is 2017. Unless you're Bellator, you got to show stuff live.
Kind of harkens back to the old Strikeforce days when Showtime would set the cameras down and then you wanted to look at the footage. You want to go find that footage of so-and-so fighting. And it's like, oh, well, sorry, we didn't
video footage of Luke
that.
Rockhold's first fight does not exist.
Really?
Even though there was a camera on site,
yeah.
the camera team was off during his first
yep.
fight. So video footage
of his first
fight.
DC maybe had the same situation
could
or
be.
Something
could
similar
be.
Or something, but... Yeah, it's just bizarre. I mean, like, the guy's already getting paid a day rate.
Right.
Just fucking record it. Just for posterity's sake. The fact that you don't – just – you can record it. You can save it in truck, bank it, do whatever after. But just have the footage. Have the presence of mind to know that there is a piece of history happening, whether it's not maybe relevant to most people's lives, but that particular fighter, you never know what's going to happen.
Well,
you know, you want to have it.
The whole thing is about building stars, right? I mean, that's the whole thing, building stars. I mean, every sport, especially combat sports, you've got to build that next star. You got to bring that next person around. And I get it. You know, maybe the person that's 0-0 fighting the person that's 2-2, whatever, isn't necessarily about star building. But what if they do come in and have a spectacular
right.
moment? You didn't even stream it. You didn't even tape it. You didn't even
record it.
I just
weird.
Don't understand the strategy. And there's nobody in the building. There's no media in their seats yet. I mean, we look like a bunch of chumps rolling in MMA junkie style. You know, being the first ones in our seat, and nobody else is there. I don't know. I I'm not sitting here trying to say I can save the boxing industry. They have no idea what they're doing.
Right.
Obviously, Floyd Mayweather just put together a very successful fight. They know what they're doing.
Right.
But I don't know. I see little opportunities where I'm like, man, you could do better. You could do better, and I feel like it would do better for you.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, we take for granted how well some things run. And granted, by the end of this whole process, I feel like I'm a lot closer to the Mayweather team, a lot of the PR team. I feel like
sure.
I can definitely work with those guys, you know, and I feel like – so I feel bad trying – I'm not trying to bash these people. But, yeah, I think we're so accustomed to a very well-run ship when it comes to UFC events so that when something is a little bit disorganized or something just doesn't fall into place or doesn't make sense, you're like, what is going on? This is weird. This shouldn't be that way. But yeah, I think the whole event, there's a lot of elements that could have been done a little bit better when it comes to the promotion side. If maybe there was maybe more forethought, but it's like these guys have been doing it forever.
Right.
It's how just, can they not have already had those discussions to decide at some point? I don't know if it just gets to the point of they're just so glad to get through an event that they don't go back and look, say, what worked, what didn't work, what do we fix for the future?
Or maybe it's the fact that everything works so good in terms of the top line. Like, right, I mean, this is a record pay-per-view, right? I mean, this is a huge event that they just look at that top line and go, like, see, we nailed it. And nobody goes back through and goes, but wait. We could have done better here. We could have done better here. Because,
you know, ultimately, you know, like, that's because there was Floyd on the fight and there was Connor on the fight. It has nothing to do with the team of people that are putting it together.
Right.
That's going to make money regardless. But if you have a team that's really pushing it out, so it's, are we hitting all angles? Are we hitting everything as best as we could? Just think what it could have been. And, I mean, you know, I hate to think that, you know, I mean, or to, you know, I guess feel entitled as a media member. You expect certain things. You expect it to work how it's supposed to work.
Right.
So when you go and you show up and things don't follow by schedule, yeah, there's always going to be divas. Fighters are always going to do whatever. But, you know, there were just a lot of things that just didn't play out because it just didn't seem that a lot of thought was put into how are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? Well, we've been doing it this way for so long. Let's just stick with that.
That's it.
You know, and that's the way of why I think – why it's having a lot of issues, because they're treating it how it's always been instead of thinking, how can we address it for the future? And we were talking about this before, you know, when it comes to everything now is going the way of digital. Even now, I was back home watching my beloved Buckeyes, and even this right here on the TV, this is streaming digital. This is streaming over the web. This is not like the real cable channel that they're putting on here at Boomers, and I certainly wasn't doing it at my house. So you got to embrace the digital. The fact that boxing and the promotion, for the most part, the PR staff, was kind of poo-pooing the whole digital thing. And us as digital purveyors of media and data, we're kind of getting the shaft, you know, when put up against these broadcast partners and it wasn't even partners, just broadcast outlets, which have nowadays – a heck of a lot less reach than what a digital is. I mean, if you want to say that somebody's going to put
a local news channel.
Yeah, you want to say a local news channel is going to put a spot maybe 12 seconds, 30 seconds in the middle of a news break amidst a bunch of other stuff, whereas I'm going to put it on the site front and center, and it can be looped over and over. It can be shared to Twitter, you know,
nations
Facebook,
around the world.
All over the place. Everybody can see it. It's not just a local cable broadcast. And the fact that they can't embrace the fact that digital is the way to kind of move things forward, it's going to have a hard time. And I think once boxing does that, then there's a chance. There's a chance for it to build itself back up, because there's always going to be great boxers. There's going to be stars. There's going to be ways to capitalize and push things forward. But you gotta do the right legwork, and you got to push it out to the areas to give it a chance. And the only way you're going to give it a chance is embracing by all the tools and the things that are out there available. I mean, you don't go to a store and say, oh, okay, I know you have this big warehouse and all this options and things right here, but no, I just want to limit myself to this case right here in front of me. You know, you just don't do it, you know. And if boxing wants to really have a chance, they got to embrace everything out there. And
I agree. I don't want to sit here on our high horse.
I know. I feel like I'm bashing it, and I don't mean to be bashing
it. But I just feel like there were opportunities available that I saw over and over that I feel like they could get better at. So,
right.
All right, well, listen, as great of a point as that was, let me tell you a man that just made an even greater point. That's this man right here. He's coming in from out of town. I'll just go with his first name. We'll just go with Kevin for now. We'll find out in a minute if he wants to
cheers, Kevin.
Spend a little more time. But bring it a round of frosty beverages.
That's
how we get the night started.
That's
right there.
That's a good
man
right there.
He's
already got my vote for the next pay per view that they put on in boxing. Put him on the undercard. I'll be there to watch this guy.
I'll tell you what. So the last thing I had with the Mayweather McGregor stuff. I will say this, and I feel like we were kind of, even us at MMA Junkie and USA Sports, were a little aggressive about this, was the streaming issues they had and the pay-per-view issues they had. I mean, obviously, this had to frustrate a lot of people.
Yeah.
Had to piss off a lot of people. I can imagine, because you were hearing stories of, like, people had 10 people over at their house. You know, they bought the pay-per-view. Everybody expects it and then can't get it. And I can understand how frustrating that was. But I was surprised to see how many people were angry Sunday, Monday, and acting as if the UFC or Showtime or whoever else was saying they weren't giving refunds. And I was like, guys, calm down. Like, it's the weekend. Like, they're still dealing with stuff. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I was a little surprised at how up in arms that everybody was. Like, I think they're going to make this, right, guys? Just give, right. Give them a little bit of time. So I was a little – I mean, it doesn't take away the frustration.
Right.
But I got to admit, I was a little surprised at how up in arms everybody was, like feeling like everybody was just going to F them over and be like, nah, I got your 100 bucks. I don't care.
Well, I think it's one thing when people expect that they're going to come out and say, hey, yes, we're going to make a refund. The fact that they addressed the fact that there were problems right off the bat but didn't immediately say, hey, this is how we're going to fix it. We're going to remedy it. They were like, oh, well, we're sorry. We noticed there were problems. We apologize. We're going to look into it. You know, they probably could have made a better statement that just alleviated people's worries right from the get-go.
Just say something.
Just say something. I mean, they know they're going to give refunds. It's a guarantee. Do you think that – I mean, that's just the way it is, you know. So just say it right from the get-go. We're sorry. And if there's issues or whatever and you weren't able to get it, we're going to make sure you get your money back. Just fucking say it and just get it over. And I guarantee people are still going to be butt sore over it. But at least they know what's coming. Don't make them have to reach out and say something first and say, are you going to give refunds? Why haven't you said anything? Are you going to give it? Like, you know that's the inevitable thing. But then it just makes you think, okay, here's this big business. They're going to try to do what they want to say and go as long as they can without giving a refund.
Hold the money as long as they can.
Hold the money as long as they possibly can.
Maybe you forget about it, get tired.
Yeah, maybe you'll just drop the whole issue or whatever. And the fact that, you know, I don't think it need to go to a class action suit level. How quickly did they get that
people
shit drafted?
People are filing suit on Sunday.
I mean, that's
on
ridiculous.
Sunday, bro. There's not even people in the office yet to answer your call.
It's unreal how quick that. I mean, you're always going to have.
That's what shocked me.
Stupid shit of
a
that.
A lawsuit
but,
on Sunday? Come on, bro.
But they should have said something right from the get-go. What gets me is that people are trying to, you know, have punitive damages because, you know, they feel they were sold on the idea that this was going to be a piece of history that you're going to be telling your kids about this, it's this, and now you want money because you weren't able to possibly do it.
It's what's
like,
wrong with
get a life. Come
what's
on. Like, I understand that.
Take
if
your
you,
ass
if
to
you
sports
ordered
bar.
It, yeah, if you ordered it and you did it, you deserve your money back. That's all you
of
get.
Course.
Stop feeling entitled that people owe you for that you didn't have a good time that night. If you couldn't find a way to at least fix it, go somewhere, fix it, shit happens. You know, but to try to ask for money on top of a refund is just ridiculous.
How many people do you think will actually – now, remembering, the fight was
fun. Because it wasn't even everybody. People were able to watch it. It was certain select regions had a hard time. And, I mean, UFC should be able to recoup costs from New Lion. If it comes down to the cost on them. And that's the whole fact of where I think they could have been quicker in saying, we're going to make sure that we're going to right this wrong. We're going to get refunds. We're going to do whatever. Because their shit's covered
and
for the most part when
I
it comes.
I bet they even have like some kind of insurance policy or something like that.
They probably have something.
You know?
I mean, you would think for as much money as this was going to bring in and how much money they were paying to make sure that this happened, I'm sure they had all their bases covered. I mean, and New Line's been handling all – of like the live streaming
for
and all
years.
That other kind of stuff. So I mean, like, if there's very few places that have better, if any, comparable infrastructure than what New Line does. So if it failed there, it was going to fail just about anywhere. But that just shows you how big the digital push is and how they're actually able to do it. That it's just going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if there are people. You know, I mean, who knows? Maybe they're nefarious people trying to fucking crash it just because they're pissed off.
How many?
You
people,
never knew.
How many people you think watch the pay-per-view? Enjoyed it, had a good time,
right.
And are still going to file for a refund.
I'm sure they're going to try, but I guarantee there's ways that they can figure out whether or not whether
like
it's
the data was delivered.
Well, that's
going to
say you better go do it. Check your shit because if they ask for like stuff from your computer, if there's you know, the browser saves a cache history, if there's something going on that shows whether internally, because I'm sure those things
all the device
because it tracks.
Track
I'm sure there's
right?
there's ways we
like
can track
Apple
it.
TV, or
even your account. I'm sure it can look and say okay. The system shows that you logged X amount of gigs of data traffic. You had to have had a file come down.
Think about
you
that.
Had
you're
to
so
have
right.
shit
even your,
come.
Your like your internet provider could.
Oh yeah, anybody. I mean,
and they'll sell you out.
Well, I mean, it's probably in their best interest to help out these big guys. They probably got a kick out of it.
Good
you know,
point.
They probably got a portion. But yeah, I mean, so hopefully nobody out there tries to do something shady like that because more than likely they will figure it out. But you never know. I mean, maybe they'll just say. We just want to wash our hands of it. Whoever claims it, just fuck it. Here's your money back or whatever. I mean, that's the beauty of it, especially with the digital thing. It's not like they were recreating a different product. All
right.
You have to do is recoup the bandwidth costs that they pay for. Like, the product's there. It's an infinite amount of product, you know, and that's the thing. It's infinite amount of profit because you have that one package and they could just fucking redo it over and over and over and shell it out. So, you know, for them to be like, all right, all right. We're going to give your money back because whatever. It's not like they're really losing money. They are in a sense. It just balances itself out. you know, that money that was in, sorry, it's gone. It's just like it takes another thing. But it's the punitive damages that if that gets awarded, that's where they'll take a hit. Because that's money that wasn't accounted for in the whole equation of things. So.
Yep. Well, it was an interesting week, man, start to finish. I, by this time, I know everybody's heard a million breakdowns, so I didn't want to talk about the fight, but I did want to talk about some of those
fight.
Things. Yeah, round one. No. I will just say, at the end of the day, I had fun. I thought it was fun. That's all I'll say. I thought it was fun. Yep. I thought, to me, everybody came out a winner. I thought Connor looked better than I think a lot of people thought he would. I thought Floyd delivered on his promises. He said he was going to go get a finish. He did. He said he wasn't going to fight boring. He didn't.
Right.
I think it was fun. I think people in the crowd had a good time. Every time there was ebbs and flows in the fight, people would get to their feet. I thought it was a lot of fun. Man. I think everybody walked out having a good time, and I did. I thought it was fun. I don't want to see Connor do it again. I'm kind of glad he lost. I don't want to see him fight Paulo Malignaggi. I just don't give a shit. I want to see him get back in the octagon. But it was fun.
It was.
And kudos to him for doing it, man. Yeah. Dude, like, bravo. That guy just saw, it's inspiring, dude. That dude saw it and made it happen. Yeah. Dude, it's crazy.
And, you know, it was such a crazy shit show to deal with it, but it was fun to watch the fight. And there's something – not that I ever want any fighter to lose or whatever, but I love listening to Connor's post-fight after he loses. I love how he breaks down his fight. He's humble. He's a whole – turnaround, and I thought both guys were very, very gracious after the fact. I thought Floyd, even leading up to it, was just sort of gracious and was just humbled, and I enjoyed what he was saying most of the fight week leading up to it, and even through the Maymac tour. And then to hear it after the fact, I thought he was very humble. I thought he gave good speeches. I mean, I just loved the way that he broke it down. And then when Connor got in there and broke it down, he still kind of said his first things at the beginning where he was still like, he didn't want to kind of just give up the fact that he got his shit handed to him. But the way he broke it down, he was humble. He was in a good spirits. And it was the same thing after he lost to Diaz that first time. I was like, man, I thought it was an incredible post-fight speech that I think a lot of people got respect for him.
Definitely.
So that's the side of Connor that, you know, unfortunate for, you know, that Connor has to lose for that part of him to come out. But the way he handles his losses are incredible. And he's just so fun to watch in those pressers. And I think you leave, even if you don't like the guy and you watch his post-fight presser and you listen to how he addresses the fight and how he addresses his shortcomings
class.
In a fight
true
and
class.
Stuff, you're just like, you gain respect for this cat. And, so that was, you know, I thought it was great. I thought it was good after the fight. You know, I hate to see him lose to do it, but, you know, in that sense, I was glad, especially to be there in the room, you know, seeing him at pretty much one of his most humble moments. Because this guy, he's destroying dudes in the MMA world. So
he represented the sport well.
He did. He was definitely a good ambassador for it. And I think a lot of people, you know, like I told you, I was getting fired up by the boxing fucker from WBC that was like, Connor showed no skills at all in front of me. And I wanted to be like, one, I didn't know who he was, but he looked like he'd been around the game, and I didn't want to like start an argument with some WBC exec or
something.
You didn't
want to get kicked out before the press
conference. I was like, God, the presser. But I was just like, how can you fucking say that, you ignorant bastard? But I mean, this was a boxing guy. But then I was like, here, I'm going to sound like the MMA guy that's just like, well, fuck you know. But and then for Connor to come out and act how he did and do whatever, I was happy for him because I felt like it was definitely going to be a moment that he's going to grow from and he's going to get stronger. And I think
regardless of people, only built his brand.
I can't
made
think
him
anybody would
star.
Watch that and be like, oh, what a dick.
Right.
Like, he put on the best face for the sport and for himself in that post-presser. But, you know, unfortunately, we only see that when he loses. Yeah. And he doesn't lose a lot, you know. So I'm glad that we were able to get that and see that and put that out there.
So you were busy today, and we'll get to that in a second. I'm going to hang on to why you were busy today. So because of that, I know that you probably didn't see this, but Conor McGregor early this morning put out a statement, his first kind of public statement since the press conference. And can you believe there's controversy over his statement? I want to read this to you. Now focus on what I'm saying here, okay? I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, but basically he just says, hey, guys, apologize, just coming around after a whirlwind couple of days. Thank you for everything. Thank you for everybody, right? Here's the part that people are finding controversy in. I had an amazing team, and it truly was an amazing and enjoyable camp. And honestly, I feel with just a little change in certain areas of the prep, we could have built the engine for 12 full rounds under stress and got the better result on the night. Now,
I'm good with that.
Okay. When he says got the better result on the night, does that not mean to you that he's saying we would have won had we been able to make this small change?
Maybe. Or just got a better result. But, yeah, I mean, I guess the only other
result
would be.
Not a better result. Stick with me here, Cold Coffee. Yeah, you're feeding the trolls now. Well, that's the argument. The argument is some people are saying – so we ran a headline that said, you know, and everybody else did too. Every MMA site says, you know, the headline is Conor could have won had we made this small adjustment. Mm-hmm. And we've had fans come at us on social media, comment sections everywhere, you know, hashtag fake news, hashtag clickbait, you assholes. He didn't say we would have won. He said we would have gotten the better result. What better was, are you saying that, like, I would have been able to last to the judges had we, that's, I mean, come on, man.
Or maybe a better showing. I could see that. I mean, I guess I could see both sides. I mean,
Boo. Granted,
well, hey, you wanted me to just listen and
yes,
and
just pump me up. Just be like, yes, John.
Yes, John. No, but I mean, I can see that. When I think a better result, because I think what he's most upset about is the fact that he got to a point, and he even said he gets to that little stretch where he gets wobbly from fatigue and other stuff, and that it affected the fight. You know, he was taking damage, and he looked like he was going to go down. But you look at his face, yeah, he was a little dinged up on the eye, but for the most part, his face looked fine. I mean, I think he was fatigued. I think he could have took more. And, in fact, I gave him the round before that. Like when we
round
were
nine.
No, maybe it would have been eight.
Was it eight? Because
I had it 4-4.
I had 6-3. I gave him the first three, and I gave Floyd the last six. But I
so
did
round eight.
Some people, I can't remember if it was eight or nine. Some people gave him nine.
Yeah, I gave him eight because I thought he was the more active. He was busy. So that's why I had it 4-4. Then I gave Floyd the next round. I thought Floyd came out really, really dominant in the ninth and then the tenth. Well, we saw how that went. But, no, I can see with just not reading the rest of it, and you know the way they just phrase phrases weird over there, you know, got the better result. I can see where he ultimately to him, he wanted it to at least go to a decision. Even going to the decision is a better result.
I think he's saying I'd have got the better result of the two men. Like,
well,
I'd have gotten the
just
win.
Said, I would have got the win.
Nah, he's eloquent. He's artsy. He's very –
yeah, but I mean that's
win.
That's – I feel like that's more of a stretch as for what he was meaning than me just thinking the better result, which meaning he got a better result. You know, a better performance, you know?
F you.
I'm just saying.
All right.
I'm just saying that's what I feel like. I feel like because he did. His he got really, really.
This may be a long
he
show.
Got really, really tight. Why?
Because that was only the first thing that people annoyed me about. I got more stuff that people annoyed me about that I'm going to get to. Now I'm going to find out that you're on their side too.
Well, there's no – it's no us or them.
All right. Well, let's move on.
Are you going to say my people next?
Well, it kind of goes that way. As a matter of fact, actually, let's move on with this. All right. Well,
you people.
Here's what we'll do. We're
you
gonna
and
have
you people.
We're gonna set it up, and I think this all may come together like a master plan that we didn't have. But yes. All right.
Like we planned that
after
out.
Yeah, come on, all the show prep that we had,
yeah, right?
And the storyboards and the arcs. All right. So that was the fun part of the week. Since then, real world has set in, right?
Yeah.
The hurricane it's been awful.
Harvey.
Harvey is
work.
Just doing havoc down in South Texas, my home state. I lived in Sugar Land for 1 year, so I won't try to pretend like I have deep roots there, but I am familiar with the area. Scenes that remind me of Hurricane Katrina from a long time ago. I'm a guy that loves New Orleans, used to go there all the time when I lived in Dallas. I mean, it's just havoc. And, well, we'll just say that's where you were today. Kudos to you, Cold Coffee. You spent the afternoon volunteering your time at a phone center, just a phone bank, taking donations and helping process funds that were coming in. So bravo to you, man. Not many people give back to their community, and obviously it's not like within your means to grab a bass boat and head down there and pull people out of their houses.
I don't have a big truck like our wonderful Derek Lewis.
Well, that's where I want to get to next, so I want to give props to you first, but I want to get to Derek Lewis because we saw the scenes, you saw the stories everywhere, but you obviously, you and Derek have had kind of a friendship over the years, and you said, hey, why don't we reach out to Derek and see if we can get some comments instead of just posting these Instagram photos, whatever, why don't we see if we can get some direct photos? And we did, and we were just kind of looking for a fun little, not well, fun is the wrong word, but you know, just some firsthand account of what was happening.
Yeah,
not
man
just
on
Instagram
the street,
pictures.
Like just what are you seeing down there, you know?
That's
I mean, like,
the exact
what's going
phrase
on?
And he left us with a little bit of a little extra piece of the story. And I just, for people that didn't see it, we'll play it. It's not long. I want to let everybody hear kind of how the conversation went. And then we'll get to the second group of people that pissed me off this week. Let us know, man. What's going on down there? Tell us what the condition is because, you know, we're seeing these pictures. It looks downright scary down there, man. Is it as bad as what we're seeing?
Oh, yeah, it's pretty bad, you know. There's a lot of ants in the water right now, too, so that's making me even worse. My ankles and foot right now, my leg is all ate up by ants. and a lot of the kids dealing with the same problem too as they're walking across the water.
That's crazy. So where do you live? Are you on the outskirts? Or are you more in the center of town?
No, I'm right here. I'm right in the neck of it right now. You know, but my street is not flooded like everyone else is. You know, I live in a newer neighborhood, so the drainage is just really not clogged up like all the other neighborhoods are.
Well, that's good to hear. So, you would have been safe at home, but you decided, hey, I need to get out there and help out a little bit. I guess what was the thinking that you felt like you need to go out there and, I mean, put yourself in danger, to be honest with you?
I've always been that type of guy that I like to help people more than I like to help myself. And so, you know, I just seen my opportunity, and the police, they kept getting on the news and saying that they're not going to help no one unless it's a life or death situation. And basically the firefighters said the same thing. And so they were just asking for a bunch of volunteers, so I just went out there and gave my hand out.
That's crazy, man. So obviously we saw that big truck you got, which looks like it's well equipped to help all this. But what are you doing? Do you just drive around and see? I mean, just look for people in need, or are people calling you, or how are you finding people?
People messaging me on Facebook, or you know, my neighbor has his number up there, and a lot of people are calling him, and so we just go to that area. And just, some of the areas my truck can't even go through.
Just because the water's too deep?
Yes.
Damn. So what are you doing? You're just going and, like, helping people get out of houses and kind of, you know, extract people out of being stranded or what have you?
Yeah, mostly we're trying to get all the families that have kids. You know, and so, yeah, we tell them just go ahead and stand on whatever you can that's not in the water, and we come and get you.
That's crazy. Where are you taking them to? Any place in particular, or just kind of ask if they got somewhere else to go?
Yeah, we asked them if they have somewhere else to go, or we're just taking them to the gas station or the fire station.
Wow. What's the, I guess there's got to be a ton of relief. I mean, the emotion, I imagine it's got to be pretty strong.
Oh, yeah, big time. You know, I'm just thinking, like, what if we're next? You know, what if my house gets flooded next? Because it's supposed to get pretty bad in the next few days, because Harvey's supposed to turn into another hurricane. It's a tropical storm right now, and they say he's heading towards the water, and it's going to turn right back into a Category 1.
Oh,
and head right back in our area. You know, so by Thursday, we should be having another hurricane.
Oh, my God. Is it still raining right now? I mean, is it just constant
rain? Oh, yeah. It's constant rain.
So how long have you been at? Have you been doing this all day today, basically?
Oh, I was last night as well. You know, I picked up one guy and his family, his wife. They just kept apologizing to me, talking about, because all he really had was his clothes, and he wanted to take his Confederate flag. He wanted to take that with him, and he just apologized and said, "Man, I sit in back of your truck, man. I don't want to have my flag inside of your truck like this." I said, "Man, I'm not worried about that." You know, so he's saying that you never know if you ever need someone. So, and I already know where he was going with it. I just said, don't even worry about it, man. It's okay. I don't care about that.
That's crazy. You got a Confederate flag with him?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and his wife kept hitting him and saying, don't, should have just left him.
That is crazy. And I mean, did you think twice, or you just thought, well, I mean, this is what we got?
No, I don't care about that. You know, I live in Texas. It ain't nothing new. You know, and I've been living in the South all my life, and it ain't nothing I haven't seen before. Discussed about, you know, I don't care about that type of stuff. I just wanted to help her. My power went out just for a little bit, then it came back on. I have generators and gas. I'm prepared for the worst, you know.
I mean, I guess it's secondary right now. You got a big fight coming up. I guess you're kind of just putting training on hold right now and just deal with real-life situations right now.
Yeah, you know, just walking through that water is pretty much a workout itself. You know, my thighs are burning. You know, the current is pretty strong.
And it's just everywhere, huh? Just the water's just streets and highways and everywhere.
Yeah. I installed a gym in my house last week, and so I should be pretty good.
Oh, wow.
So right now I'm really not worried about the fight. I'm worried about making sure my kids and my family is okay and everyone else around me. You know, so the fight going to come. It's going to happen or whatever. I don't care.
And so you said there's ants everywhere in the water. Is that what you said it was?
Yeah, there's ants, alligators, snakes. Yeah, it's pretty bad. That's the worst part about it, just the damn ants. I don't live in the ants.
That is scary. Well, Derek, man, you're doing good work, man. Is there anything anybody can do? I mean, is there anything people can do to help you or anybody that, I mean, you have any suggestions? We'll put some news out there. I'm sure MMA fans will want to help you out. Is there anything that can be done?
Just for us to Popeyes, you know. Give me that 12 piece right there. We appreciate it.
All right, Derek. Well, Ben, keep doing good work and stay safe. And obviously, we'll talk to you closer about the fight as it gets here, man.
All right, sounds good, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Derek. All right, so that was Derek Lewis recounting what happened on the ground, and I'll get to the people that pissed me off in just a second. But the people that didn't piss me off, this gentleman right here. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Happy to be in Vegas. Happy to finally meet you guys.
I love it, man. We always say if you happen to be in Vegas on Thursday night or wherever we are, I mean, if you know we're in your town, come reach out, and we'll definitely have a frosty beverage for you, especially if you sit down with a round like you did, which is a strong, strong play right there. And
we'll Rockstar get,
we'll,
move
we'll
right
get
there.
You on a microphone if we can. But I said it was kind of funny as I was setting that up. The master plan came together. It looked like we planned this, but we didn't. You know, it's funny. I just talked to you a little while ago and said, yeah, come on by. But as it turns out, you're here in Vegas, but you're from Houston. And
yes.
So what we're talking about right now has to be hitting just incredibly hard for you. Explain to me, I mean, did you head out before it started happening? Was it happening? What was going on?
Well, I headed out on Saturday morning about 2 o'clock in the morning. The storm had already started, you know, making landfall, but, you know, the area of Houston we live, northwest Houston, our neighborhood hadn't been underwater in 42 years. My house is 42 years old, so I was thinking, okay, well, my family's going to be good to go. And, you know, turns out we ended up with about a foot and a half of water in our house.
Wow.
And my wife and daughter were rescued by the Cajun Navy, which is fantastic. And then we're fortunate because the Church of Latter-day Saints came in, and they've been there the last 2 days, and they're going back tomorrow doing the demolition work, getting all the wet and saturated wood and everything out of the house. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing. They're taking care of us, and we'll rebuild.
That's crazy, man. It's got to be tough on you to be away from home and all that's happening. I know, I mean, obviously as a guy, you know, I spend a lot of time on the road. It's never easy, even if you are there, but being away, it's got to be even harder.
It's really challenging. My wife is a true champion. She's a military spouse. So the other hurricanes we've been affected by, I've always been deployed, being stationed out of Florida. So every time I was deployed and our roof got ripped off of our house or whatever, my wife has been the champion and taking care of it and rebuilding and having, you know, a good home set for me when I got home.
That's amazing. So I guess you could probably speak personally, not why you weren't there, but it does speak. You can speak personally to the importance of the volunteers, right? I mean, the fact that what guys like Derek Lewis is doing, because it was interesting to hear what Derek said, is that basically the authorities, and understandably, I mean, they basically just said, listen, it's so dangerous out there. We cannot get out there unless it's a life or death situation, which is kind of weird because – it's kind of all life or death situation, isn't it, to a degree? So, like, how do you make that? But people like that, it's got to mean a lot in the community for people that are willing to get out of bed and put themselves in danger to do that.
Oh, it's absolutely incredible. I've got friends right now that are coming to Texas from Florida to help with the efforts.
Wow.
They're bringing supplies from Florida that they've just gathered up, and they're coming out to do what they can do.
That's crazy.
I've got a friend of mine in California that's already volunteered his time to come out to my house and help me rebuild. It's just an amazing show of the American spirit, of the human spirit, that when we're in need, we're all in need. So
that's awesome. All right, well, let me tell you about the people that aren't a good show of the human spirit or the American spirit. This pissed me off. So Derek tells this story, right? And the story goes, as you heard, one gentleman that he rescued had a Confederate flag. And Derek said, you know, don't worry about it, man. We're going to get you to safety, and that's what it's all going to be about, right? And me, I thought it was a great story. It's an interesting story to me. I think most of us know what the Confederate flag represents to pretty much anybody that sees it. But immediately, people come to the defense, whether it be on social media, whether it be in the comments section. And the great thing was they were like, I can't believe you, MMA junkie, this type of journalism, a black guy, a white guy with a Confederate flag. And I said, hold up. I never said it was a white guy with a Confederate flag. Derek never said it was a white guy with a Confederate flag. He said it was a guy with a Confederate flag. So if you read that and you think it's a white guy with a Confederate flag, doesn't that mean it's racist? I mean, if there's no – if there was no connotation, which that's what some people are trying to say, is like, oh, the Confederate flag doesn't necessarily represent racism. It also has this alternate meaning. It's like, bro, the swastika used to mean something else. That little mustache that Hitler had used to mean something else, but now it means that. And the fact that you assume the guy was white should tell you that that's a racist emblem, right?
You would think.
Piss me off.
You think. But, yeah, no, I mean, you don't. I guess you do take it for granted. I mean, you almost assume it, and I guess that is just the state of things in America that, yeah, I mean, most times they're not. I mean, you're not really hearing stories of, you know, large groups of African-Americans running down the street with their Confederate flags that they choose to bring instead of a warm blanket for his wife, perhaps, or, you know, pillows or something along those lines. So, yeah, that was more of the story. So, yeah, I mean, I can see where people harp on it, but that was the thing, you know.
I just thought it was an interesting story. It pissed me off that people were acting like I'm trying to create some story where there's not. To me, that showed the character of Derek Lewis. Here is,
yeah.
Maybe it wasn't. Maybe the guy wasn't a racist. I'm not saying he was, but to me, that's a racist emblem. And the fact that he was like, don't care, not even going to worry about it, I'm going to save you anyway.
Well, even the guy even said it. The guy was like, I don't want to sit in the bed of – I don't want to sit inside your truck with this. You know, the guy felt shame about what he was and what it represented, and so – but had enough respect in his own mind that I want to sit in the bed of truck rather than do this. I realize you're saving me. And I feel kind of like an asshole with this Confederate flag. And that's why his wife was busting his chops.
Too.
His wife was busting his chops like, I told you not to bring it. That's stupid. But the guy felt so strong. And if that's his history, if that's his belief, whatever, that's fine. But if you're going to catch heat for it, you're going to catch heat for it. But realize what it is. Here's a guy getting rescued. And that's out of all the possible things that you could bring with you as you're being rescued, that's what you choose to bring. You know, and if anything else, I mean, I like the idea that the guy wanted in his mind is like, I was sitting in the bed of the truck. In a sense, without saying the words,
show some respect.
Show some respect. But I mean, because the guy realized this must look really bad because wherever he's from, that flag represents something strong for him. He realizes what that flag represents possibly to the black guy that's picking him up. You know, that this was a very big symbol of oppression for so many years, and the fact that in this moment of harm and danger, that's what means so much to you, that's the second thing that you bring. You brought your wife and you brought your flag. What does that say about where you place
that's
things
weird,
in your life? You know, there could have been a lot of other things. I mean, it would have been shittier if the guy was like, yeah, unfortunately we had to let the dog go. But I brought my fucking flag, you know, and I'm not saying that. I think that's me being an asshole.
What if it was like a piece of history? Like it was like a literal historical flag that hung over a Confederate Capitol building or something.
I would have liked
that. Was worth like $1 million.
Well, then I can almost get it, you know. I mean, or I'd be like, don't you have like a fucking attic or something that you could throw that shit up in and come back and get it?
What if it was a Confederate flag blanket? Like it was actually the only blanket they had, and it wasn't actually a flag.
Then you get
but
more
it was
of a
Confederate
pass.
Flag
then you get a pass because then it's a blanket.
Okay,
that just happens to look like a symbol. That, you know, a lot of people don't understand and don't like. But, I mean, it's just shady. I mean, I just think of it all the times that we fly in a plane and, you know, if there's an emergency, they're like, don't grab anything. Just get out and get to safety. And I'm like, oh, I need my gear because that's my life. Without that, I'm absolutely fucked. And in this guy's mind, that was him getting off the plane and that was him making that decision. What else should I bring? Even though I know I shouldn't bring anything with me, I should get to safety. In his mind, that was his world that he felt that he had to bring with him. So I think that tells very telling of where this guy is in his head and where he's at.
So scoreboard for this week, people that pissed me off, I'm 1-1. You not side with me on the McGregor people, but
– Well, no, I mean, I can definitely see where – yeah, it's like, you know, people are – I mean, but people want to hate. I mean, it sucks that, you know, I think they took it in a certain way. I can see where people are like, oh, why'd you want to bring in the race thing? But that, I think, is part of one of the unique angles that out of a story of Derek Same and all the kids and all these other things, Derek could have had a moment where he was like, nah, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't. He didn't
see
he's
you
like,
over there. He's like, oops, sorry, I mean, gotta keep growing.
I mean, he even said, he's like, I'm from the South. I see this shit all the time. It's not a big deal to me. It's about just making sure people are safe. So he was willing to forego whatever and do what is necessary to save a human life.
I thought it was more of a praise of Derek's character than it was of me trying to put right. down any possible.
That's how I saw it. Derek was above and beyond doing things that I can see where a lot of people might have just been like, no, fuck you.
Yep.
Sorry. I might give your wife a ride. Or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know. But, I mean, that's the kind of thing. I don't know. Maybe it was his great-great-grandfather's. Maybe there's a bigger story to where I can see where, to him, he thought that somebody looters. I mean, looters and shit is happening down there. And maybe that's something to him that it is irreplaceable.
And if they're carrying water bottles out of a grocery store, it ain't looting.
Yeah. You know, so, yeah, people need water. But
all right, last topic that got a little bit weird to me this week. Where do you stand? I'm not even going to preface it because we're
Brian Stan. I love Brian Stan.
We're 1-1 right now. One, you tell me I'm off base. One, you tell me I'm good.
I have not said those words yet.
Snoop Dogg.
Okay.
Snoop Dogg revisiting quickly the Mayweather-McGregor stuff. His him just blasting the Conor McGregor FU, you know, N bomb, F bomb. Yeah.
Motherfucker, 50 and no, blah, blah, blah.
That was actual audio pulled from the Instagram feed. Well done. Just producing on the fly.
Yeah,
that was
I had
great.
To hurry up and download that real quick.
Where do you stand on that one? Is it Snoop? Get the hell out of here and don't ever commentate again?
Nah.
All right, go ahead.
No, I mean, I think Snoop was catering to his audience. He was catering to the people that brought him up. And if you listen to the very end, I think he realized that, I kind of sound like an asshole. And he's like, but nah, for real. You like, you
I mean,
know,
he's got
Conor.
Heart. He's got heart.
Yeah, he's got heart. He's got heart. But I mean, no, I mean, he's catering to his people. I mean, I don't follow Snoop. You know, I'm sure there's a ton of other people that don't follow him. So I found it after the fact. But watching it, initially it got kind of fired up. I was like, damn, dude, they're fucking paying your paychecks. You're doing all this other shit. You know, but, you know, I was over it shortly after. I mean, it helped that he said what he said at the end, because if you can push your anger down long enough to get to the end where he actually gave some kudos to him towards the very end, I was like, all right, he wasn't such a dick. But, I mean, he was just caught up in the moment, and he was speaking to his audience. He was speaking to people that would get it. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people were, in a sense, taking it like it was the Great White Hope again, against a huge African-American star athlete. Everybody was like taking sides, whether you wanted to or not. People somehow were getting pushed off to the sides. And I think here's one where he had to sort of toe the line, and then in just a sheer moment of just going along with us against them, he was just riled up with them. I mean, he was excited, you know, he was surprised. I mean, like I said, his head came back at the end after he realized, oh, fuck, I really should kind of put a little – asterisk at the end of this statement. But I mean, I wasn't upset about it. I initially was like, I was fired up. I was like, fuck this. But at the end, I was, after I got past it, you know, I was just like, you just fired up, man. He was just speaking to people that I guarantee use that as a rallying cry.
All right, we'll see.
But
now,
you know,
I feel good. See,
I mean, I guarantee Conor didn't think shit about it.
No. Nah.
So why the fuck should we care shit about it?
Well, that's the
it,
thing is that I did kind of bother me a little bit, but at the same time, I don't feel it's so out of line that the guy's got to lose it. He's never gonna. It's not like he's ever gonna be commentating a Conor fight. Like if he was gonna commentate a Conor fight, that would be bad because you could be like, he has obvious bias, right? He's never gonna do that. Is it unfortunate that that's kind of, you know, a fellow employee, so to speak? Not really, because you guys do two totally different things, but you are both under the UFC umbrella. Yeah, I found it unfortunate. I found it surely distasteful. I mean, that's not the type of language you want necessarily, you know, permeating anywhere. But whatever.
Who's
I mean,
ever going to say Snoop's a corporate man?
I was going to say, I own a couple of Snoop CDs. It's not like the language offends me that much.
Yeah, no, I think – if anything else, I mean, being so exciting, caught up in the moment, I think later on he maybe even by the end of that video he realized that, hey, maybe I am putting what I have going on at risk. But I think also in the same sense, you know, no, he was like, good, you know, he's just like, he was just caught up in it. But, I mean, I don't know. I certainly didn't think he was at risk of really losing it because, I mean, I don't know how many fucking people are watching it anyways. You know, I don't think anybody's going to miss the fact if the Snoopcast went away. I mean, I think it probably does have its own unique people tying into it and maybe watching it or whatever. But
Dana,
I don't know.
Dana said the numbers are rising.
Well, our numbers are rising doesn't mean that we have good numbers. But
whatever. Mom just got her friend to start listening.
We just had a 200% increase.
All right. Oh, good. All right.
But
well,
no, I'm not. But I'm not.
Those were the
on
three
Snoop.
Groups of people that pissed me off this week, and you're on my side for two of them, so that's good. I don't think he needs to be fired. I think it's unfortunate, but I think it's good. I understand why
people need to get over.
I understand
it.
Why some fighters would be pissed off. Matt Brown was calling for his job. Yeah. I understand why they'd be offended. But
and I love Matt Brown, but I saw a lot of people giving him hate too on that as well. Like, dude, get over it. Blah 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 blah, saying or whatever. But yeah, you know me, I'm a big Immortal fan.
Straight up Xenia, Ohio.
You know, man, got to love that Ohio love, man.
I used to live in Beaver Creek right around the corner.
Yeah, I spent many time in Beaver Creek, so you probably had the Cassano's pizza.
Of course I did. Of course
so,
I did.
I don't know. I wouldn't think it was worth it. I mean, it's probably worth having to talk to, but that's a discussion that Snoop's going to have should he run into somebody. That's, I mean, you want to go on and say that sort of thing? You know, maybe some fighter will or Connor could have
they
that discussion.
They can go out into the trailer that he has outside the Tough Gym with all those nice couches where he gets hot.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it was just him just in a moment of elation just kind of – I think he's just got the best of him. But, I mean, honestly, I don't think he's like really boys with any of the fighters. He realizes it's a good gig for him. But, I mean, if he had to choose between Floyd, which has been his friend – for a long time, why would you think that he would go against it just for a job because of a paycheck? Why would he turn against his boy?
He's probably good, right?
And like, yeah,
he's not
worried
about the check.
He's not hurting
in.
About money. And but I mean, like, I mean, as much as he said it, like, Floyd has been friends with him for a long, long time. So of course he's going to be absolutely over the moon when Connor. I mean, I'm sorry, when Floyd TKO'd him.
Right.
I mean, like, so I mean, it'd be like me watching. Well, I was going to say you or somebody, a very, very close friend, like go and do something where a lot of people were pulling for them to lose.
Right.
And you then at that moment, you're like, fuck yeah, fuck you for downing them. You know, that's my boy. Y'all sit the fuck down, you know. And, and then at the end, it's like,
thanks,
oh,
bro.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry, guys. I really, yeah, I'm cool. I should calm down. You know, I think that's just a moment. Dude just got excited. But, you know, he doesn't deserve to get fired. In fact, I mean, doesn't deserve more than just like that initial feeling when you're just like, oh, that's fucked up. All right, there, you had your moment. Now just be done with it.
All
it's
right.
Gone.
Scoreboard this week. Cole Coffey had my back twice. All right, I want to bring up Kevin again because he said something kind of funny. You have not seen the Mayweather versus McGregor fight yet, but you're going to see it tomorrow night.
Yes.
Are you just watching? You've already got it arranged. You got a somebody's got a replay they're going to show
you?
Well,
just what Gorgeous George and Goz have been telling me is Showtime's doing their replay.
I'm
sorry,
right.
It's
Saturday night. Saturday night,
I was going to say, I thought it was Saturday.
So Showtime's doing their replay, so I'll be watching it on Saturday.
You said straight up you're a hardcore, man. You've been, you know, you're a fight fan. So, I mean, I know you listen to the podcast. Obviously it's not like you – try to tune out and have radio silence. I mean, you know exactly what happened. You know exactly how it went down. You've heard all the post-fight discussion. So I'm anxious to hear, like, knowing that it's going to be your first viewing, like, what are you – like, what's your anticipation? What are you hoping to get out of it? Like, what are you – like, what are you thinking about?
I'm really excited to watch it because, first and foremost, Conor McGregor is a hard fighter to figure out for anyone. And – you know, I'm curious to see how he came out because George and Goz didn't give a whole lot of detail. They were just saying, wow, I think he's doing well in this round.
You got to listen into their sportscaster thing that they did.
Yes.
We tested it out. I haven't even seen it yet. I think, obviously, I was working on it. It's the first time we've done it. It sounded pretty cool. But you got to hear running commentary the whole
thing. Right. And, you know, they were also talking about what's going on in the sports book and everything. But just talking about how his unorthodox style, how he came out. And when he first came out, I think Goz was like, wow, I don't like how his stance is when he's coming in. So I'm really excited to just see how it happened. And if anyone acted surprised on how the results of the fight were, you know, they obviously weren't listening to anyone in the know.
Right.
Because Floyd was saying the entire time, his camp was saying the entire time, Connor gasses.
Yep.
We're going to let him punch himself out for the first four or five rounds.
They were right.
It's simple as that. He did exactly that. He figured out what Connor had to offer. He said, oh, wow, I've been touched by the left. I don't like it. So he defended, and then he started working the body. Like any fight camp will tell you, work the body. You take the body, the head follows. So, you know, Floyd did what he was supposed to do. And, yes, I did see the replay of the final round. And from the replay, Connor looked like garbage.
He was done at that point.
He was very tired.
Yeah.
And I understand what he said. He wanted to go out on his shield. I'm not sure that it affected his life.
That's that MMA mentality.
That's the fighter's spirit. You know, he tapped out to Diaz, and immediately he was saying, what could I have done? What should I have done? And so I haven't even seen the fight yet, but if Floyd and Connor were to fight again, I'm thinking that Connor's already figuring out a way to make it that much more difficult to fight for Floyd.
I would agree.
Would he beat him? I don't know.
I would agree. You know, it's funny you say it because I would agree. It's the two Diaz fights, I picked them both properly. I picked against him the first time. I was like, this is more than he is aware of. Like, this guy is too big. You know, he's not – he doesn't know what he's getting into. He's preparing for an entirely different opponent. But as intelligent as he was, the way he evaluated it and the way he addressed it, and I was like, he's going to get him in the rematch. You know, now, to say that he could beat Floyd Mayweather in a rematch in boxing – maybe not, but you're so right about it. It's actually, you'll have to hit me up on Twitter after you watch it because I want to know. I mean, knowing that you've heard all the fallout, that you've heard all the breakdown, I want to see, like, once you actually see it with your eyes, if it all makes sense to you or you thought people were off. I'd be anxious to hear about it.
Yeah, I'm extremely excited about it. From what George and Goes were saying, and I've been listening to them forever, I'm not meaning to put out their podcast.
That's the Junkie family, bro. It's all good.
it's all in the family.
But, yeah.
But from what you know, they're saying is, you know, okay, the first three rounds they would give to Connor.
Yep.
Maybe the fourth, that's questionable.
Right.
But to see the official scorecards, I'm really curious to see with my own eyes. Maybe it was MMA bias on those first three rounds, but I don't know. I'm really excited about seeing that aspect.
I'm so glad I didn't go.
There was
with
certainly
that
no bias those first three rounds.
Floyd literally
was just holding off. I mean, and it was interesting because the tactic that it says, and you'll see it in it. Floyd employed a strategy that Connor was like, I wish I would have prepared better. The way he sort of tucked in and kind of barreled into Connor's sort of chest in his face, and forced Connor to sort of use this energy and do this other stuff. And even Connor said, he was like, you know, I never did that. We had maybe one guy that was the strategy that we did. He's like, if I would have known that would have happened, I would have prepared differently. And that's the thing about Floyd. That's not the way Floyd normally fights. A boxer won't do that typically with another boxer because that other boxer's either seen it and he knows better to probably keep his energy back, kind of do whatever. But Connor definitely, he expended a lot of energy in those first three rounds. But that's why in my book, there was no doubt at all those first three rounds with Connor.
The range adjustment that Floyd made after about the third round, it was like, dude, it literally like Connor
just
said,
turned
it was like
it,
fighting, it was like he just fighting an entirely different boxer. You know what I mean? He just literally made such a change. So, all right. So we brought you here to speak for all MMA fans because are you as big as this fight was, and knowing that you still get to watch on Saturday night, are you also kind of excited to just get back to normal shit?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't understand boxing as far as just – I understand the true fanatics of boxing and the sweet science of boxing.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that you spend years perfecting this art, and it is an art.
Right.
But to go in there and say that's a complete fight – it's not a complete fight. I'm a huge fan of Tim Kennedy. Listen to his podcast. Love everything he does. And, you know, even a mixed martial arts fight is not a true fight. It's a sport. So, you know, I'm kind of geared more towards the true fight aspect of it. And mixed martial arts is...
Well, you're a military man. You're talking about life and death scenarios on a daily basis. That's the real shit right there.
Exactly. And with, you know, just...
think?
The closer to a real fight, to an actual fight, the better.
Are you a Navy man?
I am. Okay. I retired last May after 22 years.
Very good. Well, awesome. Thank you very much for your service. I saw the shirt, and I was like, he's got to be a Navy guy.
Oh, yes, the Fighting Fitzgerald. A call out to the sailors that lost their lives.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
On the Fitzgerald. I'm waiting for the I hate it, but with the McCain, you know, the sailors that lost there, and with the McCain, I'm sorry to with the McCain, the area that was struck was combat systems area, which was my area of where I specialized. So the sailors there are, you know, they're the brothers and sisters that I worked with. And I hate to say, but I actually served with one of the sailors that lost his life.
Oh,
went to some training with him, and it just breaks my heart. And
that's awesome. Well, he's an Army brat and
Air Force.
I apologize. I was enlisted in the Navy for 6 weeks, and they kicked me out. They realized I was not the type of people they needed.
Yeah,
my life could have been very, very different. But
and if people don't know the Fitzgerald, I had to double check to make sure that was the accident that happened off the coast of Japan.
Yes,
a Philippine cargo ship was able to make contact by some fucking mishap of something. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
You're probably better knowledgeable on that. But two ships collided. Something failed. Some aspect of something failed, and unfortunately, sailors lost their lives. And
well,
that's very
fortunately,
very
unfortunate. The Navy is really
waters down there.
Very crowded waters, and the Navy's really good at conducting the investigations and learning from their mistakes. All of our branches of the military have to be extremely good with that. And so, all of the stuff that I've seen posted so far, I'm turning a blind eye to because it's all speculation.
Yeah.
When the actual report comes out, I'll read that 400 to 600, maybe 1,000-page report, and kind of see where I saw it.
Yeah.
I've got my own opinions because I stood those watches, but until we actually know what happened.
I'm embarrassed that this man bought us a frosty beverage. I'm embarrassed.
Well, we'll get him back for sure.
We'll
definitely
get him back.
Well,
definitely so.
Right now, my heart's kind of hurting. So
yeah, no,
let's back to normal life.
Yeah, let's
MMA.
Stop talking about
let's
that.
Back to normal life.
It's a great shirt, though.
Well,
thank
you. I'll tell you what. I am
Nine Line. Can I throw that out there? Nine Line Apparel.
Nine Line Apparel with the Fighting Fit shirt. Yeah.
Fighting Fitzgerald shirt. I'm a big fan of Nine Line Apparel. They're veteran owned, veteran operated, and they serve
it.
A lot of our veterans.
Bro, thank you for sharing, man. That's what we do on
that.
Here, right? We just keep it real. You know, you listen. We just talk about what's going on.
Absolutely.
So that, I appreciate you keeping it real.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited to get back to regular MMA. I am. We didn't get to see it because we left while it was going on, but Invicta was going on early night. We'll have to check the results tonight. We'll be looking at that.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of that
yet. Yeah, we haven't seen anything. One championship, UFC. So we're just getting back to normal stuff. And, of course, the hard part is it's all going to feel like a little bit of a letdown, right? I mean, this fight was so big. You know, it's going to take a while before we start to feel like, you know, it's something big again because Mayweather-McGregor dominated so much. But I am excited to just get back to the normal beat, man. Even if it is a little bit, you know, less high profile and less sexy and less page views, man, I'm kind of excited to get back to that. So along those lines, I want to say the Ultimate Fighter 26 did debut this week. Hopefully everybody's watching it. I know people are tired of the Ultimate Fighter. I get it, man. If you've watched every episode, God bless you. You deserve something special. But this is a title. There's a title on the line. I think when there's an actual UFC title on the line, you deserve you owe it to yourself a little bit, I guess I should say, to watch and to see. And there's some good talent in here.
There's some veterans. I mean, so it's not like there's a brand new crop of nobodies that nobody's ever seen. These are all talented women. I mean, there's even active UFC fighter in the midst.
Well, you see it. I mean, Roxanne Modafferi, she picked up a win on
that was impressive.
She was the number one seed, which I thought was cool. She was the number one seed. She looked great. You've got Barb Honcheck as the number two seed. She's legit. Lauren Murphy, as you said.
Lauren Murphy,
current UFC fighter. She's the number three seed. Deanna Bennett, number four seed. She's legit as well. But we started rolling out these interviews this week, and I hope everybody will take the time. You and I went and shot at the Tough House. We're doing two a day. We started with Roxanne Modafferi and Shanna Dobson on Wednesday, which was the day it debuted. We did know that was going to be the first fight, so we went ahead and ran. It doesn't say anything about who won or lost, but we figured that's the best day to roll out theirs. And then we're doing two more every single day. And so you're going to see these interviews, just short little video interviews on MMA Junkie, so you can meet these people. It's something I've been wanting to do for a while because, to me, sometimes the Ultimate Fighter, it's hard. If I don't even know who's on there, it's kind of hard for me to buy in. And, you know, sometimes you watch four episodes and you're like, who's that dude over there in the corner? I don't even know who that is. So I like to kind of give everybody a chance to just, you know, click on, watch 3 or 4 minutes of.
Yep.
And we got to really do this. And I was really appreciative of the UFC to let us do this. But I kind of wanted to tap into that tonight with a little bit of audio, because when we were going back, you and I, Cold Coffee, were editing these videos. And so, you know, we shot it that day, and it was a super busy day, right? Because we literally shot 16 interviews in a row. And I think we had other shit to do that day, if I remember right. Oh, there we went to Contender Series that
contender
night.
Contender Series.
So we shot 16 interviews in a row and then went to the Contender Series. So it got filed away really quick. So I pulled him back out as I'm going through, kind of helping, you know, do some preliminary editing for you to do the final editing. And there were two interviews that stood out to me so much. And I want to play one right now. As it turns out, these two ladies are actually paired up against each other. Again, I'm not revealing anything that wasn't revealed on the episode. But I want you to hear these, because these are two of the underrated. The top four right there, listen, Roxanne Modafferi, Barb Honcheck, Lauren Murphy, Deanna Bennett. Those are definitely the top four seeds. No question about it. They deserve to be there. I think those are your favorites. If you were just trying to put down a wager, I think the matchmakers, they nailed the seeding on that. That's your top four. But I want to start with number five, Maya Stevenson, who is Joe Stevenson's wife. Of course, the Ultimate Fighter 2 winner. And holy shit.
She's a character.
Is she a character?
Yeah.
This girl is great. So these will be playing on MMA Junkie all week, but while we refresh our frosty beverages here, I want to introduce the first of our Tough 26 interviews that we'll play here. This is Maya Stevenson.
Easy, just tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Maya Stevenson, and I'm from Victorville, California.
Perfect. Let's talk about your journey to getting here. When did you first start training martial arts? How were you exposed to it? How did you start?
I started boxing when I was 17, and then probably like about 6-7 months after that, I started like do it competitively. And so then I just, you know, I had a bunch of fights, you know, did a lot of amateur tournaments, and then I made it to nationals, took second in nationals twice. Then I married Joe, and it was all downhill after that. No. I was like, he got me in my prime. I swear, you know how many kids he has, he got me pregnant on purpose. I know it. He took me in my, right when I was just coming up. But yeah, I started boxing, and then, you know, being with him in the gym, I eventually went to jiu-jitsu, and then from there I transitioned to MMA.
When you got exposed to boxing, when you first started doing it, was it like something a family member? Did you want to do it? Like, how did you get into it?
Oh, it's funny, because I was playing soccer in college, and my mom, she's a sheriff, so she wanted to learn how to protect herself and things like that, so she started boxing, and then I was getting pretty thick in college, so she suggested I try a more, you know, another sport to keep me in shape during the off season, and that's where boxing came in.
Did you love it right away? Was it
I felt super awkward learning to jump rope, learning to punch, because I played soccer my whole life. I didn't really do any kind of like combat sports. So then, you know, it took me about a couple months, like 3 months, before I felt good. And then, you know, once I got the jump roping down, I was like, I felt like a badass. Yeah, you know, I need to punch people. So that was basically what happened.
All right. So you met Joe before you started training. Was he that introduced you to training?
No, actually, Joe and I met bouncing at a nightclub together. He patted down the guys, and I patted down the girls, and I knew he was a fighter, but I didn't know what cage fighting or MMA was at the time, and I remember him taking me to his gym the first time, and I was like, cool. I was wanting to impress him. He's like, he doesn't know that I can throw down too, you know? And so we get there, and he shows me a cage, and I'm like, what the fuck is that? Like, that's crazy, right? But then, you know, I saw a couple of his older fights, because he's real popular in Victorville, so, you know, and then that was pretty much it, yeah. So, yeah, we met bouncing at a club together.
So what did you, I guess it would be just natural that you would start training, right? I mean, did you want to, or did you was like, you should start? Or?
No, actually, it was more just like after, I didn't train MMA until after I had our first son, and then, like, it was just me and another girl, and I was like, I wanted to stay in shape and stuff, and I wasn't boxing anywhere. I didn't find any gyms in Vegas that I really liked, so I was like, maybe I'll try some, you know, jiu-jitsu or some MMA, and then, yeah, from there, and he pretty much didn't pay attention to me for a long time. He still probably pays more attention to his other fighters than me, but, yeah, obviously he helped a lot.
Nice. First couple pro fights didn't really go well for you, right?
Fuck no. Not at all. First one, took in Oklahoma. The girl is big. I lost the decision. Probably just That was new to me. I hadn't competed in a really long time. Second one was Rachel Cummings. That's some bullshit right there. That John McCarthy hates me. He does. I swear to God, and I'll tell you stories after this. So, yeah, anyway, it was in a ring. She's a big bitch. So I ended up, sitting through the ropes and getting taken down that first round. She just basically sat on top of me and kind of, pounded it out. Second round, she comes out with a kick. I catch it. I take her down. She rolls for an armbar. As I'm pulling out, John comes in. He's like, it's over. I'm like, what? And everyone's booing, and Joe's pissed, and everyone's all mad. And I was like, he's like, well, you tapped. And I was like, no, I didn't. I was like, fuck. So that was two. And then I lost the decision to Danielle. It was a good fight, but I think the takedown in the second round probably secured it for her.
So, I mean, I wonder, was there any part of you that was like, I guess this isn't for me?
Yeah, I did take, a period of time off after that. I was like, fuck, I'm not. I thought the Danielle fight went really well, but then a lot of fights kept kind of falling through, and then I honestly just didn't feel like I could train a lot because Joe was still fighting, and then the gym, and then the kids. So me, life was getting in the way, as opposed to fighting wasn't a priority, life was a priority. So I had to do that. I didn't even finish telling you my John story. So anyway. You guys, stop. I'm already sweaty, making it hot in here. And talking about crazy stuff. But that was nice. Yeah, super fun. Yeah. Okay, so yeah. So, and this includes Danielle as well. So he fucks me over. I don't want to say it like that. But yeah, I felt fucked over with the Rachel Cummings fight. And then, so when I go to fight Danielle, he comes in the back. He's like, oh. I'm looking at him. I'm like, fuck, he's going to be my referee. I know it. Are we going to have any problems, Maya? Oh, I was like, no, but fuck, you're the referee. So anyway, he ended up being the referee in that fight. And, there's a lot of points in time where he kind of pulled us off the cage, where I had cage control. And I was just, maybe it fucked with me a little bit. And then here's the most randomest thing ever. So I did a boxing match with Heather Clark a really long, a long time ago. Guess who was not the referee, the squirt, the guy that was judging, one of the judges, fucking John McCarthy. And I beat her ass all four rounds, but one guy gave it to Heather, it was her hometown, one guy gave it to me, and it was up to John, and they split that decision. I was like, this dude hates me. And I can't even look at him. Sometimes we try to make those uncomfortable jokes. Hey, how you doing? But God, that guy.
Hopefully you don't run across him again.
Go fuck, yeah, right?
Well, so, all right, so, life gets in the way, totally understandable. What brings you back to it? Because obviously things are going well.
Yeah.
So what brought you back to it?
Joe did. Joe's like, hey, let's get you a win. Let's get you back on track. Let's, get your momentum back. So, I took a fight. It was, I think it went really well. I felt like things were really connecting, and I was like, okay, cool. And then, I put off two more fights then, and then I lost to that Japanese girl, which really fucking bummed me out. I took that fight on 2 weeks' notice. I was pretty pissed, but she's a tough girl. It happens.
So the Ultimate Fighter gets announced for 125. What's the conversation like between you and Joe? I mean, is it all automatically I'm going? I mean, obviously you got to step away from family and,
family
and all that.
Well, he kind of had to give me the shot because he had took off for 6 weeks earlier, and I hadn't really felt super confident in trying out for the previous seasons. And then I figured, I'm like, I'm getting older. This is my last shot. It is 125, so I'll come up and throw my name in the hat. And he's like, okay. See how it does.
What advice did he have for you? I mean, obviously the house is kind of an interesting psychological thing.
It is. I think he tried to fuck with me a little bit. He's like, oh, you're not going to make any friends, and they're going to try to make you say shit you don't want to do. You're going to be so bored. And I'm like, first of all, I don't feel bored at all. We go from one practice, we come home, we cook our meals, we clean, we do our laundry. So that right there tells me why he was bored, because he wasn't coming home cooking shit, doing any kind of laundry. Probably smelled like ass in here the whole time. So that's why he had a bunch of time on his hands. And then he's like, oh, you can't make friends with any of the girls. Obviously, these girls are pretty great. So, I don't know about any of his experiences, but mine's been pretty good so far.
Nice. What would a UFC deal mean to you? I mean, obviously, he's been here, so what would it mean to you?
Bragging rights. Be like, here, carry my bag now. You need to do the dishes. You can go wash the kids. I'm flying out so you can get up and take them to school. Right? And then I'll keep fighting and I'll keep winning just so I can keep saying that. Right? Because my house is a competitive house. Like, we don't let each other win at anything. I've never tapped him, but I punched him in the face because my boxing is better than Joe's boxing, but obviously his jiu-jitsu is a little bit big and he's super thick. He got that Stevenson belly. So, yeah. And, like, even board games, we play Risk. Yeah. The kids aren't allowed to play his character in the video game because if they lose with him, they go to bed early. So it gets bad. Like, and then it's all boys in the house, so they're always going at it. So, yeah. Give me some free time. Give me a break.
Welcome back to the May Roadshow. That was Maya Stevenson. Man, I have no idea how her fights go. You know, we said it. We kind of heard some things that led us to believe how certain things work and certain. No, I don't know the results yet, but I can't wait to watch her fight because she is a character. And obviously, knowing you know her lineage there with Joe Stevenson, obviously she's been around martial arts for a long time. But just going back and editing those interviews, man, just hilarious.
She's very, very funny. But the character we saw. I mean, plus by the time we're going in and getting those interviews, they were pretty much all stir crazy at that point, ready to get out of the house. So seeing their interactions, even Shem Dobson, that we've already did the interview, we actually had to cut apart because some of the other girls were rounding the corner, kind of tucking behind columns, sort of making faces at her and just sort of teasing her. So here's a moment where she's getting interviewed by a media outlet, but they're still having fun kind of playing around with each other, and she kind of breaks character and laughs and stuff. So it seemed like they were all sort of respectful with, you know, and they were just very, very focused. So, but it's unique to be in that environment and kind of to just be able to talk with them and see the other kind of stuff. Like, just like you said, I don't know if it made the show or when you're talking about, like, you went into the other room and you wanted to throw something away and you felt like you walked onto a set of a show.
Yeah, I can't remember if we talked about it or not, but yeah, literally all I wanted to do was just throw a bottle away. But I walked in and there were like 10 of them sitting around the kitchen, you know, cooking. I was like, oh, shit, I'm not supposed to be here, you know?
That was, I feel like you're walking into a TV set.
Somebody flashed us or something behind us at one point. Did you hear that one interview where I was – somebody did something naughty behind us.
I think so. I think it was I'd have to go back and look at their names. But, yeah, I mean, they were
– they were having some fun.
They were having fun. They were having fun, which was awesome.
All right, we'll get back to that in a second.
Sad I missed that part.
UFC Fight Night 115 is this Saturday. Kind of a unique situation for us. It's our boy – Abbie Subban out there in the Netherlands doing it by himself. This is crazy. So this was one of those shows that, to be straight honest with you, the bosses at USA Today, you know, they're, hey, trying to trim a little money. What do you think about this one? And they were like, can we do this with one person? And I'm like, can we do it with Abbie just flying from London? Obviously, London to Rotterdam, pretty damn cheap direct flight, whereas I've got to go, like, from here to New York to Amsterdam or to Heathrow and connect and all that. So at first, I was kind of a little reluctant, but I got to make concessions here and there. We're lucky that they let us cover as many events as they do. But I got to say, the one thing that really disappointed me about not going was I really wanted to talk to Jermaine Durandami. Like, I really wanted that opportunity to sit down with her and just like, listen, Jermaine, we were there in Brooklyn. We were championing you. I've known her for a long time. Her whole, not her whole MMA career, but pretty damn close to it. And I've always thought she was a good person. And hell, we talked to her the morning after, and she was like, I'm having breakfast with my family, but if you want to do an interview this week, we'll do it. You know, all these. I mean, she's very kind, very polite. But I don't know how you don't question just the way the decision she made, the way she handled herself as a champion. So I was really, really looking forward to that interview. Take nothing away from Alexander Volkov and Stefan Struve. Love Stefan Struve. I've covered Stefan's entire UFC career. It's always been a pleasure. I think my favorite Stefan Struve story has to be the night him and Roy Nelson were fighting in Bojangles Coliseum in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the lights went out in the arena as they were about to step into the octagon. I mean, stuff like that, just crazy. And the kid, it's been fun. I mean, 7 foot tall, and he was a kid when he came to the UFC, and you've watched him really grow. And, man, the emotions he's had to deal with, his heart issues, and, you know, learning to be a 7 foot tall fighter. And I don't know, man. I really love covering Stephen Struve.
I struggled with that too.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough.
It's tough.
Just
man, I mean,
learning to use your length properly.
I know. I'm just like, oh, what do I do with my arm? It's so long.
But you know, I would have enjoyed that. And Volkov, of course, a talented guy. He works hard on his English. It's not the greatest English of all time, but he works hard on it. C.R. Bahadizadeh is a guy that you know, has been around forever, that is like kind of stalled in the UFC. I mean, there were some fights here. Barbarina versus Barbarina. Leon Edwards. I like both those guys. I mean, there's stories on here and people on here that I like, the one I really wanted to talk to was Jermaine Durandami, and then of course she withdrew from the card. So I guess maybe our USA Today bosses were right, but I don't know. You guys, I mean, this is on Fight Pass. Of course, we got to work, Cold Coffee. I mean,
I'm gonna watch it.
You're gonna watch it.
I'm gonna watch it. Oh, there's some Khabibov, Mirbek, just glancing over the card. Bohan, is it Bojan?
Bojan.
Bojan?
Yeah.
Bojan? I always say his fucking name wrong, but dude, there's a good. That's a good card.
It's good. Mirbek Taisimov. I like Mirbek Taisimov.
Yeah, that's going to be a good fight. I mean, is it stacked full of guys that you can just ramble off easily off the tongue?
No.
Hell no. But no, I mean, that's going to be a good night of fights. I mean, I'll be watching it. I'd watch it regardless, but I love this shit. So, I mean, I think if there's anything we always know, it's these cards like that that always somehow just outperform. And so I'm assuming it's going to be the same way. I'm assuming we're going to have – how many fights are there? 12, 13? We're going to have 12, 13 TKOs, you know, is what my goal is. And if we get anything less than that –
Well, that'll be great on an 11-fight card. That'll
then
be fantastic.
Somebody's going to get so knocked the fuck out, it's going to be worth two knockouts.
Well, I guess I should just say that, you know what? The good thing is it's a mid-afternoon card and it's a Fight Pass card. So that means – middle of the afternoon fights, moving quickly, so I'm loving that. Just want to say, I want to give a shout out to Abby Saban. I mean, he's handling all of our coverage out there.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, just a videographer, but he had to make the change this week. He was doing microphone, asking the questions. He actually wrote his own questions. I reviewed, you know, the questions he had already written, but he already had them there. So, big props to him, man. He had to be the one man gang this week, which is, as you and I both know, is not an easy assignment. So, just wanted to give a shout out to him at Kamikaze on Twitter. Give him a holler,
Saban.
He's a good dude. All right, let's play one more quick. Tough 26 interview, because here's the flip side of that fight that I was talking about. And this is somebody that I had heard her name, and I don't even remember how exactly I'd heard her name before, to be honest with you. But it was
Sarge?
The first time I'd ever met. Yeah, Sarge. Tijara Eubanks. First time I'd ever met her. And her personality, while completely different than Maya Stevenson, definitely stood out to me as well, struck me as well. Sucks that they're matched up against each other in the opening round, but now it's a fight that I really want to see. Maya Stevenson is actually the number 5 seed. She's on Justin Gaethje's team. Tijara Eubanks is the number 12 seed. She's on Eddie Alvarez's team. But Tijara Eubanks, I saved a little bit of this interview because we've got some we got a cool little side story about a delivery she made. Mm-hmm. That we'll keep that
Can't,
separate.
Got it. Yeah, gotta make them still go to the site and
a little
stuff.
Bit. You know, so she's got an awesome story.
Yeah.
But this
she
will be
a
good
very
enough.
Unique story.
You'll love this as well. I don't know. I this again, these are two of the strongest personalities that stood out to me.
Yep.
You know the names, Modafferi, Honchak, Murphy, Bennett, but these are two names that I just thought, you know what, we've got a platform. Let's give them a little love. Maybe give you a reason to watch the Ultimate Fighter 26.
Well, and if you have the Fight Pass, you can go back. I'm sure these fights that Sarge is here on Invicta, that's where I first saw her fight was
that's
Invicta.
Where I knew her from.
But yeah, she's got she fought Invicta
FC 21, sure.
She lost to Aspen Ladd. But she fought in Invicta FC 18. She pulled out a victory, and she was on Invicta FC 12. Then it looks like she had
no wonder
a cage
it.
Fury. But you know, she's a stud. She's been going through the Invicta thing. So, it'd be worth going back to watch those. And both of her victories are TKO victories.
No wonder
so,
I knew her name.
Yeah, you knew her from
Couldn't
Invicta.
Couldn't remember. Yep. All right. So while we freshen up here, Tijara Eubanks.
Tijara Eubanks, I'm born in Springfield, Massachusetts, currently fighting out of Prince George's County, Maryland.
Perfect. All right, let's talk about your journey. How did you first get exposed to martial arts and start your training?
I actually was first exposed to martial arts when I was a kid. My uncle had a karate dojo, and I did a little bit of karate when I was about 10 years old. That was about it. But actually, I progressed on through my life, and I was about 22 years old, super overweight, working a desk job, and super bored with it. And I was like, man, I used to love doing martial arts, and UFC is cool. I'll try to find some like jiu-jitsu or MMA kind of gym. So that's kind of how I got into it, to lose weight and not be bored after work and kill some time. And like my first week in the gym, one of the instructors was like, you're good. You want to do a jiu-jitsu tournament? And I was like, sure. So I did my first jiu-jitsu tournament like 2 weeks in. and it was like the craziest adrenaline ever. Like, I was like, oh, that was fun. And so I was fucking hooked after that. And he was like, man, you should keep training, but you need a real gym. We were just like a little club in D.C. And he was like, you know, I'll give you two gyms. Check out De La Hiva and Team Lloyd Irvin. And the reason I went to Team Lloyd Irvin is they were the only gym that I can get to off of the metro. And so I started with Team Lloyd Irvin, quit my job after about 2 or 3 months, and just went headfirst into the jiu-jitsu and MMA training. And 10 years later, here I am.
Were you an athlete growing up at all? I mean, did you have an athletic background, or was this the first time you'd really kind of done something like this?
Okay, so I played a little bit of sports. My dad always had me into stuff. I played college tennis as a walk-on, nothing crazy. Like, nothing crazy, but little tennis. I also played high school basketball. I always, like, played tennis with my family. But I was always kind of a chunky kid, so I never really considered myself to be an athlete. I just kind of played sports. So I had a little bit of experience doing some other stuff before.
And for you, I mean, so it sounds like you were a bit of a natural at jiu-jitsu or had some natural talent. Was it love at first sight? I mean, did you love it right away as well?
Absolutely. Actually, I wanted to do MMA first because I thought that was cool. But when I got over to Team Lloyd Irvin, my coach was like, okay, you want to be a professional MMA fighter? I was like, absolutely. And he was like, have you ever wrestled? I was like, no. He was like, boxing. He was like, no. And he was like, okay, you got to have a base. And I was like, jiu-jitsu sounds fun. He was like, great. And so I went, I fell so much in love with the gi and so much in love with competing in jiu-jitsu. Like for the first 5 years, I just did straight up jiu-jitsu. And jiu-jitsu always kind of be my first love, my first heart, because I can do jiu-jitsu the rest of my life, man. I can do jiu-jitsu until I'm old. I can't keep doing MMA getting kicked in the head until I'm like 47. So I'll, but MMA is, that's always what I wanted to do. That's where I wanted to build my career. That's where I want to have the most fun. That's where I want to make the money. That's where I want to be like out here doing cool shit like that. Jiu-jitsu is my love, but MMA is what's going to take me to the next level.
So world champion level jiu-jitsu player, but then you get into MMA and you're taking punches to the face, right? I mean, what was that adjustment like? Did you know, was that frustrating, difficult adjustment to make, or did you, you know, soak that up right away too?
Absolutely not. I loved punching people in the face, and I love punching people in the face. I think if MMA just was like, I was like, man, one day I was like, guys, there should be a jiu-jitsu tournament where you can just punch people in jiu-jitsu. Because my jiu-jitsu, everyone thinks jiu-jitsu, they think guard, they think triangles, they think flipping around. My jiu-jitsu has always been designed to bring me to MMA. So my jiu-jitsu is a heavy top passing kind of game. My jiu-jitsu has always been about controlling, taking down, passing the guard, and submitting from side control. So that transition is the same. I do what I do in jiu-jitsu, except now I get to punch you along the way. And that to me is the most fun. And I also don't mind taking a shot or two in training, like, no problem.
Love it. So still relatively early in your professional MMA career. So, but you hear that the Ultimate Fighter is going to happen. What was it? Was it immediate? You're like, I'm going for that, or you know, did you talked into it? What was it?
Oh nah. The first article I saw, I was like, oh, I'm there. And the first, I actually tried out for the Tough with Yuan and Claudia. They called out 115ers and 135ers, and then at the trials, they ended up cutting 35 altogether. So, okay, bummer, no problem. And so when the opportunity came around the second time, it was pretty golden because I was between gyms and I had just started a family, so I kind of like didn't know where my career was going. So, yeah, when they announced it, I was like, oh, I'm there. And they announced it at 35, and then the next day or two later, they switched it to 25, and I was like, okay. And I looked around, I was like, still going. Absolutely. I was like, I'm not going to let 10 pounds fucking stop me from the most mega opportunity of my life. So, yeah, I was like, oh, well, it looks like I'm going on a diet.
So your first cut to 25 was for the show?
I cut once before, 2 years ago, in my fight versus Caitlin Chukagian at CFFC. Wasn't fun, and was like, No thanks. I'm going to go back up to 35. So yeah, coming into the show, I basically just G'd it out. I was like, I'm going to get the fucking weight off one way or another. And it's going to happen. I'm a new flyweight, baby. I just changed my whole mentality. I was like, you know, fuck it. I'm a flyweight now. I'm shaped like a flyweight. I don't mind being the biggest girl in the house because I figured I can get this weight off for the house. And then once I'm a flyweight for my career, I'll have my whole camp to get ready for a cut. So I'll just get through this 6-week grind and reshape my body and get some professional help after that's all said and done.
Are you able to support yourself through fighting, or have you had to have a job up to this point?
I worked on and off over the last 10 years. Once me and my partner got together and decided that we were going to think about starting a family, I started working again. So I started working about this time last year, the summer of 2016. I started working again and hated it. My aunt hooked me up, so sorry, auntie, but yeah, I fucking hated it. I hate working. It's, oh, fuck. And I was working security. It was paying good, but oh, I hated every minute of it. And so as soon as I came out for the tryouts, and I didn't wait for them to call me, I went home, I quit my job. I was like, babe, I'm going to the tough house. I'm quitting this. And she was like, you gonna wait for them to call you? I was like, nah, they'll call me. Quit my job. Fuck that.
So, you were confident? I mean, you just felt that good? You're like, I nailed it. I'm going to get this.
Oh, yeah, I know I nailed it. I was like, oh, they're calling me. I just put the energy out in the universe. I made it through tryouts. They kept me on for the week. I did my medicals. I did a few more interviews. And I just went home and was like, this is it, man. I knew it. I was like, this is it. This is it. Quit my job. Got rid of my car. Got rid of my apartment. Left my girlfriend our brand new baby. And she's a rider. She was like, go, babe. Go for it. I was like, fuck yeah. So, yeah, I knew it. And then because they didn't call us till I think we left July 10th. They didn't call us like 4 days before that. So I had been quit my job. So I wasn't worried about it. I knew I was going to come out here.
So this is a big, big moment for me. This is the dream, right? Pro fighting, UFC contract, UFC title.
Oh, this is the dream. This is the goal. This has been what the goal has been for the last 10 years. This is everything. And it's phenomenal, man. I've had the time of my life out here. It's been a grind, but it's been exciting the whole time. The whole time. I mean, every morning I wake up like, fuck, yes. It's great. I love it.
Welcome back to the main road show. That was Tsijara Eubanks. Hopefully you enjoyed that little look into the Ultimate Fighter 26. Two strong personalities. I'm excited. Well, you look very.
Well, I just remember because you asked me if I was
certain about something.
That was me about Audio Boom. Like now that we've been working with USA Today Sports, they've been trying to group this with some other USA Today Sports network. So now we're available as well on Audio Boom, and so that's probably going to play more of a bigger portion going forward. It's still going to be in the same places if you go to the website.
Because that'll be like the whole USA Today
family. Yeah, they kind of want to bring it into the family, you know, because they realize that the MMA Roadshow listeners are the best listeners.
I mean, we'll just head up the whole
USA
Today.
Yeah, so they're just like, you know, hey, we want to just follow that along, you know. So if you go to the website still to do it, that's not going to change. It's still going to be in iTunes. It's still going to push it everywhere. I'm not going to let me or make me like – take it off all the
Hell
place
no.
that you guys are already getting it from, but Audio Boom now is in the works, and so if you go to Audio Boom, if that's what you do, or if some of the sites route you to Audio Boom, don't think that your shit's been hacked. It's part of the plan. It's part of the network. So
yeah, that's right. It's a little development going on behind.
Yeah,
we've
been working on it for a little bit. There's been more technical things that while still doing all the other job stuff, you know, trying to make that. So, yeah, that just finished up today. So if you go, you can see the logo that they created and stuff like that. I still like the one that I did.
Yeah.
You know, because that's old
school. They came up with their own logo for
it. Yeah, they made their own fucking logo.
With, like,
another little
with, like,
shit.
Legal artwork.
Yeah. Fuck them. Pirates for life.
All right. Listen, we're going to go have a frosty beverage with our man Kevin. You will be in Edmonton next week for UFC 215. You'll be along with the young Mike Bonds. You guys will be handling it up there in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, can't go into details, but I got some personal bullshit going on in my life. So if you want to send out good vibes to me, I certainly would appreciate it. That's it. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.